Chairman. Let me start by thanking the organizers of this conference for inviting me, particularly my friend Aket Rosalie, for fishing me out and recommending me to call me again and giving me the opportunity of meeting Telos again after our meeting in Utah. Mr. Chairman, mine is just to make some pronouncements on politicizing the divine and theologizing the mundane, the cross currents of law, religion, and politics in Nigeria. The thesis of my submission is that we appear to be pursuing the shadow while living the substance. It appears to me, and I think I can do that by, I have a 37-page paper, but I will read the abstract, and if that's the only thing I can read, I think it says it all. From the embers of several ethnic nationalities, colonially conjoined and subsequently amalgamated for sheer administrative convenience, modern Nigeria has emerged with some internal contradictions. Apart from offering a holistic analysis from the general and Islamic perspectives on a number of issues that account for near absence of peace, the paper emphasizes the imperative of a peaceful world based on the principles of justice and fair play in the distribution of resources, promulgation of law, religious practice, and social commentary. I started by quoting the Archbishop of Canterbury, who said recently that when you talk about Nigeria, you must end it off with a caveat that the issues are not as simple as you have presented it. I agree totally with him. I believe that some of the issues in which religion is being implicated are non-religious issues. And what you have is people just seeing the externalities, misinterpreting what is behind it, and when you get emotive, you even surprise yourself with some contradictions in your statements because you are emotive about it, and you won't even see facts as facts. My position is that the socio-ethnic and religious configuration of Nigeria, the nature of the federating units in Nigeria, religious influence on public policy, the fact that Nigeria is not a secular but a multi-religious nation, the abuse of education, and the socio-economic status of religious leaders, they are part and parcel of the problems that happened in Nigeria. When you look at this, that is the map of Nigeria showing the 6 geopolitical zone. Nigeria is a country of about 160 million people with 250 ethnic groups and 499 languages. I always believe that religion is a unifying factor in Nigeria, not a divisive factor. Nigerians would have been more in trouble if not for Islam and Christianity. How do you manage people who want to claim 500 identities and none is ready to subjugate his identity to anyone? Islam and Christianity came to mellow down the number of differences, despite the fact that you still have problems. Many people cannot think the other way, would think these religions are bringing problems. My own position is look back into your history. How many wars you had fought before Nigeria came into existence? How many lives you had lost based on ethnic divide. And now, with the coming of those religions, you will still have few problems, but they are definitely fewer than what they would have been, because religions are narrowed down. They have created some religious identities where these individual 500 or so ethnic groups and their languages are no longer standing. I went on to show that in the north, Muslims before independence, Islam was the dominant religion, and others are second-class citizens. Just as Muslims were second-class citizens in the south, irrespective of their number in the southwest. It has been said that Muslims in the southwest, southwestern part of Nigeria, where I come from, that we are religiously liberal. Yes, I agree, but the credit must be given to the Muslims in the southwest, because they agreed to be a second-class citizen. Our religion, our educational system, everything was Christian, understandably. But the Muslims in the southwest were ready to live with it, because they knew that their Christian brothers did not create it. It was a creation of history. I went on to say that the nature of the federating units, that the northern and southern protectorates of Nigeria were brought together with that meet of a northern Muslim and southern Christian, which is not true. But the federating units in Nigeria were not actually the states. You have two regions, later three. Later they became 12. They became 19. They became 30. And in 1995, they became 36. They were mere creation of the military. There was no internal affinity within each of these units. They were creation of the central authority arbitrarily. Therefore, it's not a matter of one group against the other. Wherever you find yourself today, you are part of it. And tomorrow, you can be split into two and you become enemies. That is clear from, look at Kwara and Kogi. They used to be Kwara before. Now they have been split into two. They are at each other's throats. I now went on to say we have the geopolitical zone that you can see there. And the geopolitical zone, if you go to this table, you will see the distribution of the geopolitical zones. The northwest, the northeast, how many states, what's the population, what is the religious configuration, and the percentage of the total population of the country. If you look at this, and that is taken from National Population Commission, you will know that the informal geopolitical structure, which seems to enjoy some acceptability, is creating some problem. If you go back to the map, even ordinarily, if I say there is a southeast, this is what is called southeast. Look, this is what is called southeast. And you will see that definitely it's not in the southeast by any geography. But it has to be called southeast because there is a southwest. Remember that originally you have eastern region, western region, northern region. Even if the geography does not agree with the appellation, there must be east. The point I'm making here is that some of the problems to an ordinary mind, you see the externalities and you start to pursue it and you dissipate your energy. But to the intellects, those who are the intellectuals, they should know that what you find is not real. They are just the externalities. I give you an example. In 2005, I was appointed a co-secretary to the Nigeria Political Reform Conference. A Christian southerner came to me and said, I want you to do so for me. I said, no, it's not possible. That's not the rule. Then she said, look, your counterpart, who is from the north, who is a bishop, Reverend Father Kuka, who is the bishop or Catholic bishop, a respected Catholic bishop, was the secretary. But he's from the north, while I'm from the west. This person from the south told me, your Christian brother will do it for Northerners. I said, he's free to do it. Now, she went to that my Christian brother and confessed her sin. After confessing her sin, the bishop prayed for me. After that, I said, I want you to do. Bishop said, it's impossible. She said, don't you know that Oloyede will do it for Muslims from the south? You can see the play. When it is convenient for her, she's a Southerner. When it's convenient for her, she's a Catholic. So that is the use to which people put religion in Nigeria. Now, when you look at the issue of Sharia, many people surprisingly, I don't know whether it's collective amnesia, I don't know why people think it is strange what happened in Nigeria. It's because we are not learning from history. Prior to independence, and I'm happy one of the speakers said it today, prior to independence in Nigeria, we have two, yes, 5 minutes more. Okay, we have two systems. But I want to say that there is the Islamic-dominated north influencing the penal code in northern Nigeria. In the southern Nigeria, you have criminal code. And that was what brought in what we call 1960 agreement, whereby you tolerate Islam within northern religion for the penal code. So 1979 was the next civilian regime. And therefore, ordinarily, without any stimulation, the issue must come up. And that's why it was why it came up. In 1979, it came up because it must come up. Some people had even talked about Sharia as if it's coming from the blues. I think it's because we don't know what, we seem to forget history. The geopolitical zones where you have Sharia, there are those 12 states I've mentioned there. No time to talk about that. But look at the election results, 1979 to 2011 in Nigeria. You will see that religion is just a victim of circumstances. What you have playing out is pure politics. And when it is convenient for somebody, he runs to religion. And of course, so many people. Now, I mentioned that with the resource, then I talk about why the revival of the Sharia, which is historical, because Islam, Sharia was the main law in northern Nigeria before the coming of the military. And what people are now doing is that they want to be popular. And in order to be popular, they needed to play the religious politics. Now, I went further to say that when you look at this issue of Boko Haram, as far as I'm concerned, Boko Haram is not the issue. I get the issue of education, that education continues to be used as instruments in the hands of Christianity to subjugate Islam in Nigeria. And I gave an example from the University of Ibadan, where a lecturer in law, land law, set a question, and the question is this. Alhaji Luther took 4 creditors. You know what that means? Alhaji Luther, who loots the treasury, went on and said, Muhammad, kill and go. This is using educational so-called secular platform to create some religious tension. And if you go, I've cited so many 4 or 5 examples. But I want to address this issue of Boko Haram. Boko Haram issue is purely an incident that could have been stopped if not for the politics of it. And my own politician, an American professor in New York Times, summarized correctly the position of Boko Haram, and I quote, Boko Haram began in 2002 as a peaceful splinter group But it was not until 2009 that it turned to violence when Muhammad Yusuf was killed. I'm quoting Professor Jean Alcobis, an authority on African history. You can also see that from so many. Then let me also tell you that Professor Kivik said that many of the bombing in Nigeria today are not done by the Muslims. And of course, I have so many examples. Father Kuka said, and I will quote about it. He said, sometime last year, a Christian woman went to her own parish church in Bauchi and tried to set it ablaze before she was caught. Again, recently, a man alleged to be a Christian, dressed like a Muslim, went to burn a church in Bayelsa. In Plateau State, he cited so many examples. This is a Catholic bishop. But he's saying the obvious, the truth, that what you have in Nigeria is monetization of religion. People who go by the name of religion, who creates this problem, the underlying factor is corruption, and religion is just a victim. You see people sweating, and you can think they are going to die for religion. It's about money. When you find out that most of them, I've seen so many cases, that religion, many of these political leaders that are being propped up by religious leaders, these religious leaders are exploiting them because they take some money, extort them in the name of praying for them, and make sure that they donate certain percentage of public fund into their churches. And of course, they will have to create crisis in order to justify what they take from the churches, or what they take from the government. I then went further to give, because it's one thing to just talk as if we are in the market. It's another one to talk with statistics. When you look at the statistics of election in Nigeria, you will see that these claims of religious violence cannot be supported. I just look at that. Look at when somebody from Northeast, or when the two contestants were Muslims. Look at when the two contestants were Christians. Are there any difference in the result? You cannot. Because you see a Christian from the North Central, you see a Muslim from the Southwest, and the results of the election does not show that religion plays a role. What you have is utilization of religion for political ends. And I end up by saying that in my closing remarks, that we are having an increasingly intolerant world where justice does not matter, where exploitation of whatever is good, the might, once you are mighty, you are powerful. And I give an example of what is happening in Israel. If you ask an average Nigerian, 80% of Nigerians, they will tell you it's a Christian, Muslim battle. Where does that stay? Any knowledgeable person knows that it's not a religious battle, it's a land matter between Israel and Palestine, and it has taken, even America that is supporting for political reasons. Not that America does not know what is right or wrong, but it's not in the interest of any presidential hopeful of America not to support Israel. It's a political suicide. So what we are saying, in effect, is people continue to exploit religion for political ends. And what was my recommendation? My recommendation is that two people of religion should come together and disallow this exploitation, because they are just bastardizing religion. They are using religion. If you ask anybody in Nigeria today, particularly because of the international media, oh, they have killed a so-so number. Those who are died as a result of these things, they are like mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are interreligious. They go from the mosque to the church. Thank you very much.